I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week, Diana Snyder. Welcome, Diana.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you because you do an awful lot of teaching, and you teach kids, and that is an area that really interests me. So excited to learn about the toys. We'll get to that in a minute, but I really want to spend a lot of time on the toys program and educate people about that. But now, it's interesting how people start. So your grandmother and 4-H gives you your start with some embroidery. What's that like, the 4-H thing? Is that just here's how to thread a needle and shove it through some cloth, or what do we do with that?
Actually, in 4-H, I didn't do much embroidery.
No.
I don't think I did any. Think of it, because that was after I gave it up when my grandmother taught me.
Oh, okay.
I think it was too big of a piece, and that's something people should think of when they're teaching children, is not to give them a 8x11 piece of fabric with a design on it. Give them something that they can handle, that's small, and that they'll complete it in an hour or two.
So grandma wanted you to do a masterpiece.
Grandma wanted me to do more, and I just did a little bit, and I wish I could find it now because I'd finish it.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's long gone. Yeah. In 4-H, I did a lot of clothing construction, and sewing was the thing. And you went from needle and thread to using the sewing machine.
Oh.
And so that was, and I did a lot of other projects in 4-H too, and was a junior leader, and then went on to do extension work. That was my vocation until I got married and moved to Vermont.
Oh. So the 4-H really gives you, well, I'm sure, you and I are probably about the same age, but back in those days, those fundamentals, those women fundamentals of sewing and cooking and all those things. Is that really what 4-H was providing, was here's how to sew some clothes and do some repairs?
4-H actually is all aspects of living, not only in and it could be in any environment. At my age, most of it was farm children that were in it, mm-hmm. and adults. And of course, it is a national program, and it also is international. They have an international exchange program. And so it gives you the basics, and then you can go on and learn more, or you can even go on, and to your vocation, like I did.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I taught middle school science, one of my first jobs, in a farm community, and there were an awful lot of kids in 4-H, but I never explored what it actually does and what they could learn. But they were enthusiastic about it, so I figured it had to be a pretty good program.
It also gives you a lot of leadership skills, I believe. Uh-huh. And I know they have a lot more now. They've expanded now to things like engineering and all of the aspects of living.
Adjusting with the times, huh?
Adjusting with the times.
Yeah, yeah. So then where you really took off with your needlework was when you joined the Green Mountain EGA chapter. How'd that come about?
Actually, I was part of the South Burlington Arts Committee, which did leisure arts in classes for women and and they asked for somebody to teach embroidery, and I thought, so I went to the needlework store, and they said, oh yes, there's an EGA chapter that's just starting, we'll let you know who the president is. So I contacted her, and she gave a class, came and did a needlepoint class for us, and I was hooked. I said, oh, this is something I've got to do. And so I became a member and became a very active member. Soon was roped into being an officer, and then grew from there to region and then nationally being active.
Yeah, that's the impression I got, is you don't just join and show up at the meetings. You
No, I don't. And I also put in my 2 cents worth and do a lot of teaching at the meetings once I have accomplished the technique.
So that needlepoint thing, see, that's so, it's interesting to me because now obviously your grandmother planted a seed, but
I think so.
But
yes.
But put you on a path that wasn't interesting at the time and at the age, which is certainly understandable. But the seed was planted. So then when you got to this situation, it hooked you right in then.
I think so. I did do a little bit of embroidery in between. My mother made dolls. And cloth dolls, and she didn't do much hand stitching, and so I would do the faces, would embroider the faces on.
Oh.
Some of them I don't think in the beginning were very good, but I tried. And so I enjoy drawing, and I ended up adding things to my blouses or whatever I was, you know, whatever I wanted to wear. If I wanted something decorating my socks or something like that, I would embroider on them. So I did gradually pick it up, but just simple little straight stitches, no cross stitch or anything like that. No stitches like Hardanger or a fancy lace work or anything.
Yeah.
At that point, but it was after I enjoyed the embroidery skill that I picked up those and took classes. I was eager to take classes.
That whole education thing seems to be the thread that runs through you. Is it the teaching you like?
I think it's the sharing.
Okay.
I enjoy teaching. But it's being able to see what other people can do and what they can accomplish, I think, is one of my biggest joys. And to say, have them say, look what I did. Look what I'm able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that's it. Plus, I love creating. And if I see something, I mean, we travel a lot, and when we go somewhere, I always have pencil in my hand and a sketchbook to sketch something or to make notes about what their embroidery is like. Or if all my Christmas cards are angels. And so when I'm in the country, I will take pictures of angels on. I don't know how I got started on this, but I'll take a picture of a statue, or like there's an angel on the Montreal hospital at the top. And so I took a picture of that. And for the Christmas card that year, I embroidered the angel.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what I use a lot of times for my designs. Or it might be one of the pictures that I sent you of the flowers was for my garden.
Mm-hmm.
That I went and sketched the pictures, you know, I took those, and then I'll say, okay, now what types of stitches can I use? What technique am I going to use to do these? And I like to instill in children and other people that, you know, the way that you look at things, you can stitch it too. Try it. It's not necessary to go and buy a pattern.
Right. Yeah, you can make your own, yep. So the drawing thing, you have formal art training or you just like to draw?
I always like to draw. The only thing is when I I went to a real small elementary school. We had, let's say it was in the upper grades, it was 4 through 8. And in my 8th grade class, we had 2 of us that graduated from the 8th grade. So that tells you, I think there were 24. Maybe about 25 in the whole school.
Oh, my. So, wow.
A little wooden school with a stove that was, now I'm aging myself. They had a wooden stove in the middle of the room. And the boys would throw erasers at it that would smell.
I mean, oh, jeez.
Memories.
Yeah.
This is often. But anyway, and drawing then, the teacher would give us a book and she'd say, okay, you copy this picture.
Mm-hmm.
So that was what we did. But then when I went to I had to go to middle school for the for ninth grade because the school that I went to was, that's the way the school was set up.
Right.
And the first thing I signed up for was art, and that's where I got started. So I had an art course that year. I had another one in high school, and that was the extent. That's the extent of my training. And then I just read art instruction books and practiced.
Yeah. So I gave you a little foundation, but really it's in your genes to just draw and be an artist, yes.
Evidently. Well, yeah. I'm not a super-duper-duper artist. I won't say that. But.
Well, my guess is you're better than my stick figures, so we're going with artist.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Thank you.
We're going to do that, yeah. So, all right, so then that answers another question I had. Then most of your embroidery work is your own design.
I prefer to have it be my own design, yes.
Yeah.
And, all your teaching is supposed to be your own. It has to be original anyway.
Right, right. Yeah. Have you ever done extensive stitching of other people's designs, or is it always just been?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I do. And I hate to say it, but when I go to a national class or something, it's their design. And I feel that I'll continue until the day I can't lift a needle. I'll be taking other people's classes too. But if it's a group correspondence course or something like that, I'm sort of a rebel, and I will cut the design apart and so that I have the basics of it and make it my own.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, that was going to be my next question is do you stay true to the design, or do you start getting creative? And I knew that would be the answer, that you do your own thing. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, and you know, I mean, there's everybody does it different, but that's for many people is the fun of it, is to take a design and modify and change the colors, change this, that, and the other thing, and make it their own. And, yeah, it makes it fun. The EGA thing, you've done just about everything. These days, you're pretty involved with Master Craftsman Program and
not involved anymore in that. I am the rep from our chapter for the region, and that's the extent of that. I used to be on the teacher certification committee, but I'm not on that anymore. Although if they asked for help, I probably would say yes. And it's the toys program is what I'm concentrating on now more than anything.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like you're the ideal organization member. You can get you to help out with wherever it is. You're part of that 20% that does all the work while the 80% enjoy the benefits. Yep.
Well, I'd like to get the 80% to help me.
Yeah. Yeah. Good luck on that. I've been in enough organizations that that 20% drives the horse, but that's okay. It's those people are just essential in keeping organizations going. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. Yeah. So this. So now, what certifications do you hold from EGA?
I have a Master Craftsman in counted thread, and I have teacher certification.
Mm-hmm.
I went halfway in graduate teacher certification, but then illnesses of my father-in-law squelched that. I wasn't able to get all the teaching in, so I never did go back to complete that.
Yeah. So is counted canvas then? That's your core technique.
My core technique, I would say now is ethnic embroideries.
Oh.
And most of them are counted. I do surface work, but I'm really not into silk and metal. I'll admit that's not one of my things. But I dabble in everything. But it's a lot of it is counted. But preferably in ethnic embroideries.
Okay, and that's the one part that really interested me. Define, what do you mean by ethnic embroideries? What are you doing there?
Anything from other countries.
Okay.
Since my husband retired and I retired, except from EGA, we have traveled a lot. Our son travels a lot for his business, and so we have traveled with him and with the family too. So wherever I go, you know, I pick up their embroideries. Also, I was an exchange student when I was in my 20s to, actually not as a student, but in my 20s to Finland, and so I learned some of their embroideries. And we have dear friends that live in Norway, so I, of course, have them that helped me get some unique stitches in Hardanger. And I just go to the ethnic things,
yeah.
to the different countries and see what they're doing. For I have taught Ukrainian as well as Hardanger, and the pull thread ones of in Denmark and that of Scandinavia. So
when we go on a family trip, then we land and you're off to embroidery and everybody can do what they want.
Actually, they helped me. When we went to Cyprus, my son said one day, he says, "Today's your day, Mom." And I said, "Really?" He says, "Yes." And we went to a small town in Cyprus that has Lufthansa embroidery, and it is known throughout the world. And I just was in awe to see these ladies sitting outside with their embroidery in their hands. So of course, you know, I sat there and took a lot of pictures and said, "How do you do that?" And they were wonderful. So that happens in some of the places that we go. And sometimes it's my family that gets me there rather than me.
That's all right.
We always have to have a visit to needlework shops and things when we head out to some other place.
Yeah, that's fun, because for a lot of people that would be too intimidating to just go insert yourself into a culture like that and try to learn. Do you start with a shop? Do you try to find a shop? Is that your starting point? Or you just find people doing needlework somewhere and latch onto them?
Well, usually you don't see them doing it. You're lucky if you do. But in Norway, of course, I had dear friends, and one of them is runs the Hardanger shop. And makes the costumes, you know, their ethnic dress.
Yeah.
So she taught me the edging for the collars and this type of thing. And it was interesting because I had was published in one of the Nordic Needle magazines, and with a Hardanger piece. And this was before I had met her, and she had. So I had showed it to her, and she says, "Oh, I don't know how to do that. How to dang a stitch? You teach me." So it's sort of a joke that I was teaching her a stitch. But also, while I was there, she was able to get me in touch with the people at the museum, the Hardanger Museum in Utna, and they took me for a full day. And let me take pictures and explain all of the pieces that they had. So whenever I teach that class, the students are lucky because I have all these photos of true Hardanger pieces.
Yeah. What a treat that must have been.
It is. It is.
Yeah. So you got to go in the back room and see the stuff that never comes out.
Pulled out drawers and drawers and drawers. I was there for hours and hours.
didn't want to go home. That's great because usually museum people are their time is so limited. So that's great when they're able to give you that kind of time and let you really enjoy it. That's fantastic.
Well, the trick is that you let them know in advance,
mm-hmm.
and usually they're very good about it. I mean, at Vestaheim in Iowa, it was the same thing, and usually museums are very good. I know our Shelburne Museum here, which has a very extensive embroidery collection, they if you let them know in advance, they will give you the opportunity to study their works.
Mm-hmm. It's got to be so much fun. Yeah. All right, let's go back to Cyprus there. Just take me through that experience of what kind of needlework are they doing, and what did you experience there? That sounds so fascinating.
It's actually, it looks like Hardanger, but it's done altogether. It's different because in Hardanger you needle weave you do the outside, you make your foundation, and then you cut the fabric to get the holes to do the needle weaving over. And in the Cyprus one in Lufthansa, what you do is you cut it first. You cut all of these little squares first, and you needle, and then you do your needle weaving, and you do your edging. So it's
You cut the ground cloth first?
You cut the ground cloth first. Yeah, right. Always right. So it's really sort of tricky, and then you do a binding stitch around the edge. So it really is tricky. Took me a while to conquer that one. I did do one very small piece, but they have beautiful, huge pieces, and they'll sit there and they do it. And instead of working on a hoop, they use a pillow, and they pin the piece, they pin the fabric to the pillow, and use that to hold it firm, to hold it straight, so that they can do their needlework.
Mm-hmm.
But these ladies in there, old dress in their long dresses, would sit there like they would have in the old times. Just a very, very small village up in the mountains, but shops. There were I bet there were 10 shops that was selling this needlework.
Oh my. Wow.
Very expensive.
Oh yeah.
I did splurge, needless to say. I had to splurge, but the people in the shop, that they were just so friendly, and the clerk even ran and got her mother to come and talk to me, and she'd bring a couple of pieces that she was working on. So if you're friendly to them, usually they're friendly to you in as far as needlework is concerned.
Yeah.
I think we're a special breed.
Well, to me, needlework is just like music to musicians. There's a common language, even if the spoken language doesn't match up. There's a common language either through the notes or through the needle and thread that allows you to connect and communicate.
That's a wonderful way to put it. I agree with you.
Yeah. Were you able to use that? I mean, you were able to talk with these ladies, or did they know English and you were able to do it?
They spoke. They spoke English very well. I have a feeling that they had a lot of visitors.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We're lucky. English seems to be an international language. We usually don't have much problem when we travel.
Yeah, I have to say that. When I've been to Europe, I don't know, half dozen times or so, it amazes me. I mean, I feel pretty good that I'm able to handle English. And then you go over there and they'll bounce between languages like it's nothing. And in restaurants particularly, which I'm, almost have to have that skill. But boy, it's just amazing. And I mean, I don't know any other language. Of course, the yes and no's in two or three languages because you just pick those things up. But for them to communicate, so then you experience the same thing in Cyprus. They know enough English that you're able to spend time with them. That's great, yeah.
I can understand French more than I can speak it. My father spoke French fluently, but he never would speak it to us kids because it was Canuck. It was Canadian French.
Yeah.
And Finnish, I learned when I was there because I was there almost a whole year. And it was interesting. We went back for our anniversary, our 40th anniversary, and I had remembered it. I was surprised because people would speak to me in Finnish and I could answer them. I was shocked because it did come back. And it's funny because I dream in those two languages at times. So
really?
Who knows how this brain works?
Wow. So it's ingrained in you. It's ingrained. Yep.
Evidently.
Yeah. That's great. So your personal stitching, I mean, all that hard anger, what do you do for personal stitching?
It depends on my mood.
Okay.
I always make Christmas stitch gifts with stitch, you know, that are stitched items, especially for the granddaughters. And usually they're things that I've designed are, but I run the gamut. I mean, my latest ones were surface stitching, one was a group correspondence course, and then which I had cut the flowers apart and put on and did in a different color than she had. That was a box for one of the granddaughters, and the other one was a class that one of our members taught that was stump work. So neither one of them were counted work. A lot of my work is counted. I think pull thread might be my favorite. I like the way it distorts the fibers, but I'll see. I think it's because whatever has inspired me as far as the design's concerned, like the pillow. I mean, the flower garden just sort of stimulated me to do that. And like I say, the angels at Christmas time, and each one is usually they're a different technique. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I have a hardanger angel. I've got one that is pull thread. There's another one that is quilted. There's one that is, it's whatever the design sort of tells me. One of them is just simply outline stitches because it was a statue and I wanted it to be very simple. So I can't say that there's any one specific type of embroidery that I like. Because times I feel like counting, and other times I can't be bothered to count.
Well, that's interesting. Interesting that the design tells you the technique.
I think it does. Yeah. It does. Oh, yes, definitely. Design always tells me the technique.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then off you go.
And off I go.
Yeah.
Or I'll tell you truthfully, the other day, our program chair asked if I'd teach a hardanger class in the fall. And I said, yes. And she says, well, bring some of your work in so they can see what it'd be like. So the night before, about 2 days before, I said, I don't have a hardanger name tag. So I've got to stitch a hardanger name tag. So, you know, it happens that way sometimes too.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the multiple techniques because I'll try about anything twice. Yep.
Twice. Yep. Well, I have some that I've tried and I say no way, like silk and metal threads.
Yeah, I know. Some people like that and some don't. That's a different
I think
world.
It's beautiful. I admire it, but.
But you don't want to do it.
I don't want to do it. But as my eyes, as I grow older, my eyes are beginning to go and I think, oh dear. It's so I have a feeling that in the future we'll be doing more surface than counted.
Uh huh. Yeah. Yeah, that happens to all our eyes eventually, yep. Magnifiers and LED lights keep us going.
Yeah.
Yep. Turn them up as bright as you can and have at it, yep.
I do have to use a magnifier.
Yeah, well, I do too, yep. Matter of fact, I don't know how to do it without a magnifier anymore. No, it's okay with me, whatever helps, yep.
Oh, sure.
Yep, all right, so let's talk about this. Teaching Our Youth Stitching, the Toys Program. How did this come about?
Actually, it came about because there used to be a program in the region many, many years ago. And all of our chapter, well, I shouldn't say all, but most of our chapters do teach youth in some way. But as our membership in chapters has declined and the people have not gone out and are not doing it as much. So we get thinking about it. And as we thought about it, we thought if we could train adults to teach the youth, then, hey, listen, we will have more people embroidering.
Right.
So we said, well, how about the school, going to the school art programs, because they do have needle art. They do weaving. They do other fiber arts. Why can't they do embroidery? So actually, I said, okay, I don't mind sharing this thing. So I got three teachers together from my local, from the South Burlington, which is where I live, and three art teachers. I asked them if they'd be interested, and they said yes, they would, because they definitely had fiber arts, but no, never embroidery. And I said, well, would you be interested? And they said, yeah, sure. So we had a training session for them. And actually, what a training session includes is it has the not only the techniques, but they get different projects that they can do. It starts out with how different steps that you can use with the children to make it interesting, and there's just some little fun little types of things that has them doing gymnastics as well as uh-huh. stitching. But
let me back you up a little bit. From a student perspective, what are they learning? Are they learning just basically how to thread a needle and create a simple design? What is their experience?
They are learning both the counted stitches and the surface stitches. They actually do them. It's a whole day at least class. And they're doing both, actually learning them. Mm-hmm. They're learning things like how the children can thread a needle, you know, how to show them to thread a needle, not us, you know, to make it easier for them. The fact that it's easier when they're first starting to have a double thread, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
They are also learning different ways to get a design, and some of this is by instruction, is not by actually doing it, but by having the references, the paperwork, you know, the booklets to show them how to do it. And we have a series of booklets that we have different types of projects that they can do, and they are written for the instructor, as well as what the things that they can give to the children, you know, mm-hmm. that they can read for the children to do. Because we recommend that it's 8 and above, you know, the kids that they're teaching. So it's a resource as well as the actual instruction.
Mm-hmm. So it's a one-day course for the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's how they implement it in their curriculum, whether it's a 4-week unit or whatever it might be.
Actually, most of the things, I know the teachers that have used it, they have used it over, they said usually it's a month, you know, a 4-week type of thing that they do it. It depends on how long their classes are, because of course they're all the same. Some of them only do one thing. Well, I know one of them sent me, that was featured in the paper, in the local newspaper, with what the children had done. And I was very upset because they never said how they had gotten the program.
Oh.
But that's neither here nor there. They were doing it. That's the important thing.
Right.
But they all made creature pillows that were just adorable, that they had they embroidered the faces on them. But so it's, It varies. The thing is, though, when STEM came in, this was about a year later, STEM became very popular in the education system, and the art classes was one of the places that was cut.
Yeah.
And the things that they were doing, of course, they had to do the basics and that, and they just, there was no way that they, so the interest in the schools just isn't there anymore. We keep trying to get in, but it hasn't worked. Yeah. So.
Well, yeah, that's one of the great crimes of our education system these days is the art aspect of it. The work with your hands aspect has been shoved aside in the interest of standardized tests and STEM mm-hmm. and all those things. And
yeah.
And then the kids come out and they can't even sew a button on a shirt. And you know, those are just kind of essential skills that you should have. And it's a shame because, I mean, I'm sure you did. And I know I did. I went through where we had home ec, where we had cooking and sewing and mm-hmm. woodworking and art. And, you know, you had all those things, but you at least had been exposed to it, even at the most basic level. And so it wasn't foreign, you know. And you look at, like, I mean, just cooking, you know, at least knew how to boil some water and make soup, you know. But those are essential things. And you know, make a cake, and I still have the little quilt that I made in the sewing segment. And but you know, it's I think those things are critical, and yet kids don't get it anymore. And of course, parents, you know, some parents will teach it, and if you got a 4-H, I'm sure you learn that. But then other parents don't, and many of today's parents don't even know themselves a lot of things. So. It's, you know, I applaud this kind of stuff. Plus for me, teaching youth to stitch, I mean, in this hobby, if we don't educate youth and bring young people into needlework, you know, it's just going to literally die off. And it's, to me, it's as essential as creating designs and doing our own stitching is finding ways to teach young people.
I agree. I know my girls do. My granddaughters do. And actually, they had it as part of their colonial times, which was interesting, that they were making samplers.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, if you can't get it in, that's one way is to put it in your history
right.
curriculum. But
right. Right.
No, thoroughly believe that in junior high or high school, they should have a course that's called family living or living after graduation.
Yes, yes.
Living on your own. That would work.
Yep. Well, but that's just it, isn't it? I mean, you never know when you're going to have your own apartment and be on your own.
That's right.
And you can't afford to eat out every night. And those basic things, like I said, sewing a button on a shirt. I mean, you mm-hmm. need to know how to do that stuff. And if you can't thread a needle, you can't do any of it. And
that's true.
Yeah. So tell me about this, the TOYS program. So you've done it in a few schools. Have you expanded outside of the school system? How are you handling that?
Actually, we have. We also work with the libraries, and that's is more of some of the members going to the libraries and teaching, but also we have done some classes where the parents it comes with the child or somebody comes with the child, and that way they continue on with a small, and that usually is a small project that the child works on along with the parent.
Yeah.
So that extends it too. And, I know one of our members has this program, and she's doing the sewing the button on and things like that, as well as embroidery in the class that she teaches. And that's a series which is working. The Girl Scouts has been my best one for bringing embroidery to mm-hmm. group. And it's interesting because it is not part of the regular Girl Scout program. It's they don't have a national badge or anything for it. So I think there are some places, I know in Needle Arts they had one woman who had done a what they call a patch, which is a local item that the Girl Scouts can earn, and that she had one in embroidery. But here in the council that I've been working with is the one in Vermont. It's Vermont and New Hampshire, the Green and White Mountains is the council name. And so I go to the summer camp that is for leaders, and I give training classes there. One was in counted thread. Another one was in surface stitching, just the basics. Next year, they've asked me to come back, and I think I'm going to do one with junior leaders that can bring back to their chapters. Uh-huh. And I'm going to do it. Hopefully, one of the ones that they'll accept is on creating your own designs.
Mm.
If you do a stitch, and our design ideas, and these include things like using fabrics and embroidering over the fabrics, embellishing the fabric. Another one is using photographs and transferring them to fabric just with freezer paper, and then embellishing those. Then, of course, your natural sketching, but even things like throwing a bunch of threads on a piece of paper and using those for the guidelines for your lines. I mean, just to give you some ideas.
Yeah.
But things like that. But we've been doing Zoom classes with the leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And those usually run 2 hours, an hour and a half in the evening time.
Mm-hmm.
And they get together. And I noticed that one of them in the last one was from Florida. So who knows?
Yeah.
So that's the way that we're working. And presently, I finally have another person that's working with me. And she is checking on the contacts with the other scout groups. But we also want to reach out to some of the other, like 4-H and some of those that I'm city, I don't know, some of the city youth groups, I'm sure. If it's finding the contact person sometimes takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
And getting them to talk to you does too.
Right, yeah. Yeah, but then it sounds like they're receptive once you connect with them.
Most of them are, some of them we'll just say, well, this is something that we just cannot put in our program.
Mm-hmm.
And you accept that. I mean, but it's bunny. I call it tiny steps. But when I look at the scouts once, when I was thinking, when you asked me about this, I went back and I thought, now how many youth have we reached already? And I know that it's over 1,000.
Oh, that's difference making. Yeah.
Because we do, one of the other places that we reach a lot, and was the picture that I sent of the little girl stitching on the canvas.
Mm-hmm.
They, that expo, they have it every year, that expo, they have over 1,000 attend each year.
Wow.
And at that particular one, was where I got the two chances to do a Zoom program for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, let's see, the first one I had 6 leaders, and the second one I think I had 5.
Oh.
At. And one of them had their older girls come too, so there was 15 in the class.
Yeah. So that's great. So you mentioned Florida. Is this something then that you want to offer, or that is being offered across the country?
Actually, I'm glad you asked that. I did go to the. Actually, I went to the seminar in St. Louis, the national seminar.
Mm-hmm.
First time I'd been in St. Louis, incidentally, beautiful city. And We had an exhibit of the program, and I did give out some of the brochures that we had, and some of the classes. The class and the instructions are available to anybody that promises me that they will take them and they will teach children with them.
Yeah.
I put the work into these instructions and the actual projects. Some of them are actual projects. Get it out there. I don't care. You know, it's been done. They're there. They can be downloaded. Hey, maybe I shouldn't be saying this. But anyway, I think I took, and explaining the program on teaching on teaching people to teach, and I did, I think, 12 packets, and they were gone the first day.
Oh.
So, but they don't respond as far as evaluations are concerned. So it's one of those things. Are you really getting out there? You know, you really wonder, because they just don't. They'll email and they'll say they've done something, but if you ask for numbers, which in EGA sometimes they want us to have,
right?
I'm not getting the response.
Well, and of course, in fairness to many people, these pandemic times, it could be something they said, "Oh, we want to do," and then they can't get into the schools to do it. And that should be loosening up, though, I would think, particularly next year, with
right.
Should be right. Opportunities. The program is downloadable from the EGA site?
No. I'd have to be contacted, because
okay.
I'm the one that has all the materials. You know, the region doesn't. Eventually, actually, our website and everything right now is being, in New England, is being redone. So I don't know. It would have to be my contact, I think, at this stage.
Okay, so they get in touch with you, and then you can
right.
send
yes.
them the materials and give them some background and
give
set up
background.
A training program.
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
Yes, because I'd want to have someone from the committee, which is only two of us at the present time, to talk to them to make sure that it was going to be used.
Right.
I don't want to just send out what you would call projects. No way. I don't want to do that. I want it's to be a learning. It's supposed to be for teaching the children. It's not supposed to be so that they can have the projects now.
Right.
In them individually.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a free project.
It's not
deal.
A free project.
Yeah.
No, no.
Yeah. So okay, so they contact you, and I'll put information in the notes here, the show notes, so that people can mm-hmm. do that. But contact you, and then you'll give them some guidance and the materials.
I'll give them, correct.
And set things up, and then have some means of follow through if they need have questions or whatever it might be.
Sure.
Yeah. And so this is basically this is a program you're doing in New England, but available to anyone, any guild or chapter, EGA, ANG, whatever it might be.
Anyone. It could be, I mean, there might be an individual out there who works in a different type of program that does embroidery that feels very capable of doing this.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned libraries, and libraries are changing, have changed so much in recent years in terms of what they offer. I mean, most of them aren't buildings full of books anymore, and these kinds of things, they tend to have the facilities. So, these kinds of things are perfect for what libraries are doing these days.
Yeah, we work a lot with the library.
If I inquire write to you and say, hey, I'd like to get involved in this thing, then you have a few files of written material, and what do we get?
I have a packet, and the packet includes steps in teaching the child, you know, that you would take the different, spelled right out how you thread the needle and this type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it includes different types of classes that you can have. There is some that there are ones that are samplers. There's a counted thread sampler. There's a sampler that is of surface stitching. There's a fun thing that one of the teachers used in a classroom. When I was interviewed her, she said, I have a day that the children can do anything they want to as far as art is concerned. And so I got thinking about it and I said, oh, I've got an idea. So what you would get is a pack of cards, and each card on the front has a stitched piece that is one stitch, we call them families of stitches, which the kids can understand. Uh-huh. And one of them is like straight stitches, and so running stitches, and so it has a running stitch and a double running stitch and those on the front of the card. Another one has cross stitches, another one has knots, you know, so right. It's a different family, the five different families of stitches on each card, on one, but one family on one card, and on the back of it has the instructions on how to do that stitch.
Mm-hmm.
So she did give me feedback, and she said the kids loved them because they would go over and they'd just pick a card out, and then they would go and they'd do that stitch on a piece of fabric or on whatever they want to put it on. So it's this type of thing. Another one of the books is how to your idea designs, like using the fabric and rather than a drawn picture of how to do that.
Right.
There's one that is doing a family shield, a crest.
Mm-hmm.
The types of the styles for crests, I mean, the style, different types of shields and how they're divided and how to find out your family history and this type of thing. Oh, let's see, what else do I have? There are six or seven different ones, and they're being added to all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but that's the type of thing that you would receive, plus a reference sheet of a bibliography of different books that are good for teaching
right.
children too.
So basically, this is pretty much all set up for someone to run the program, and,
right?
And there, but still, there's a training opportunity, train the trainer type thing.
That's for the people who haven't done stitching that much stitching before.
Okay, all right. And I assume that materials is not a problem because people unload from their stash.
Actually, when we have a training class, our chapters have been donating. And so the materials have not been a problem. And most of the projects are using supplies that you can get anywhere. You know, uh-huh. they're simple things. They're not fancy fabrics that you would have to order or
right.
threads. They're basic. Pearl cotton, floss, and Aida cloth, and muslin, things like
right,
that.
Right, yeah, yeah. Yeah, just a thread and a cloth. Do something
right.
with it. Yes,
right.
exactly.
And needles.
Right.
And we do recommend with the younger children that you use tapestry needles, not, you know, not pointed needles.
Yeah.
Pointies, they call them.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's... large majority of what I do is with tapestry needles, and invariably when I pick up a sharp needle, it's like, ouch, those things are actually sharp. You forget that, yeah, they have a point to them. Yep.
So you do needlepoint mostly? Or
I'll do anything. Cross
you
stitch,
do anything?
Hard anchor, needlepoint. Yeah, I don't care. I'll try it all. Yep. Yeah, I don't discriminate, and sitting here in the room, I can put my hands on probably half a dozen different techniques, projects that are underway. So, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I always hate looking at my unfinished stash.
Yeah. Yeah, I have that. Yep. A lot of it.
Too much.
oh, well. It's part of the fun. Yep. So, okay. Well, that's, thank you for doing this. Wow. So this just sounds like a great program and, a great way for, local chapters and guilds looking for programs to do and outreach. This is an excellent way for them to do that, and they don't have to set up their own program. It's already done for them. Just got to get in touch with you and make an effort. Yeah.
And I'm a newbie with Zoom, but I have been doing a few programs on that with using that technique, and so that might be something that they might be interested in too.
Handling
getting information that way.
Right. All right. Appreciate it. This has been fun, Diana. Thanks for doing the show with us and sharing this toys program, teaching our youth stitching, and hope people out there will pick up on it and give it a try. So, Diana, thanks for doing the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed doing it too.
Yep. And thanks to everyone for listening.